To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer, and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. Well, we finished last week. We finished up Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest. You can now listen to that novel in its entirety on this podcast. If you want to hear the entire audiobook as it was presented week by week, chapter by chapter, just go back to episode 479. Episode 479 will give you the start of the book. And of course, it finished up last week. This week, we're starting a whole new short story. In sequence this time. It is an encore presentation, though. It's the short story Alibi Jones' Christmas Present. Now, I presented this in its entirety on the 500th episode. This was created for and presented on that episode. What I'm going to do now is dice it up into three segments, one more digestible pieces. So we'll have part one this week, part two next week, and part three the episode after. So Alibi Jones' Christmas Present, beginning this week on Glow in the Dark Radio. In the story, Alibi Jones gets thrown back through time to face a dangerous killer about to strike. His father, BC, the Vatican assassin. Alibi discovers he's got a lot to learn. Like that a hitman for the Pope isn't going to be what you'd call approachable. It's a three-part encore presentation of Alibi Jones' Christmas Present. Part one this week on Glow in the Dark Radio. In book news, I've got my schedule for Balticon. Balticon is coming up at the end of the month, Memorial Day weekend, down in Baltimore, Maryland. I will once again make the trek. Going to be on a whole bunch of panels, most of them on Sunday, one on Friday, one on Monday, but nothing on Saturday, which is wild. Of course, that can always change. So I'll be heading down there. And I have submitted a short story to a story competition that's going on. Scott and Tori Pond are doing a short story competition. The prompt for the story was things that go bump, and it had to include the phrase, "Hey, what's that red stuff on your face?" So I came up with something. 2,200 words. It was 1,800 to 2,200 words. And man, so it's a tight little story. We'll see if they like it and how it does in their competition. But yeah, just submitted that to them yesterday. Had to be in last night, Friday night, May 3rd. And I'll be sharing that Balticon schedule, the panel schedule, with you online and elsewhere as we get closer to Balticon. I want to remind you, too, if you like this story and you want to get a copy of it, you can get an ebook or a paperback or an audiobook of The Adventures of Alibi Jones, six short stories, and that now includes Alibi Jones' Christmas Present in its entirety in that book. So if you don't want to wait, you can listen to the audiobook version. More details on that at my homepage, Glow in the Dark Radio. Also, a reminder, you can support this podcast on Patreon. It's great to have your support. Got a few folks now in and supporting Glow in the Dark Radio. You could be one too. I am going to make a free audiobook available to my patrons. I've got some free audiobook codes for Vatican Assassin, which is not available for free. Yeah, the ebook is, but not the audiobook. So, that's going to be something new for patrons on Patreon. And of course, you can get more details at patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio. I am available for voice work as well. If you like what you hear, if you like the way I read, please get in touch. Again, head to Glow in the Dark Radio. If you want, you can go to /voice-work. That's glowinthedarkradio.com, voice work. That does it for news. Up next, we're going to get into part one of Alibi Jones' Christmas Present on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Hey guys, I'm Ray Belli, the host of Words for Granted, a brand new podcast that looks at how words change over time. Have you ever wondered where words come from or why they mean what they mean? Yeah? Well, me too. In fact, I think about these things all the time, and that's why I've created Words for Granted. It's kind of like an ongoing greatest hits compilation of the most fascinating word evolutions in the English language. Did you know that villain once meant farm worker, or that bead once meant prayer? The bottom line is, if you're a word nerd, let's be friends. You can find out more about the show at wordsforgranted.com and follow Words for Granted on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I hope you tune in to the next show.
Now here's part one of Alibi Jones' Christmas Present on Glow in the Dark Radio. Dip-dop, dip-dop, dip-dop. Alibi tuned into the rhythm of his footfalls as he jogged down an empty corridor in an old part of the hornet's nest. As refugees from the now hostile Solar Alliance continued to arrive, looking for new places to call home, Alibi and his crew opened up previously abandoned portions of the until recently unused base to accommodate them, which also opened up new jogging routes for Alibi Jones. He'd taken up running as a ruse to help him escape a previous captivity, but found he enjoyed it, gave him time to think, some needed exercise, and it wasn't boring like jogging on the treadmill in the gym. Running through the corridors of the hornet's nest helped Alibi familiarize himself with his base. Well, it was still technically his, though it had been the Solar Alliance that had put him in charge. But their undercover mission for the Solar Alliance transformed when Alibi, his crew, and a few others left the Solar Alliance to set out on their own. Maybe it was just force of habit, but even after they'd broken away and legally taken ownership of the hornet's nest, thanks to some financial wizardry from Alibi's business manager, Emily, the crew still assumed Alibi was in charge. Alibi knew better, because ever since she'd arrived, his Aunt Anita had in actuality taken over. It was her nature. Couldn't expect the former leader of the free world to take a back seat to anyone, never mind her foster son. He'd noticed the way the others had started to ask her for her opinion, defer to her lead over his. It happened naturally. He also noticed that, unlike the others, she didn't ask him for his opinion or defer to his leadership. She did as she saw fit, which hadn't bothered Alibi too much so far. Okay, maybe a little.
What's this? People? Here?
It appeared to be a construction crew, but Alibi didn't know of anything scheduled for this section, still fairly remote from the currently inhabited part of the base. They wouldn't be rehabbing these quarters, not yet. As Alibi jogged closer, he spotted his Aunt Anita, overseeing a crew of four workers. Then the noise began.
Scrape!
A cutting tool shrieked out, hitting stone wall.
Fwash!
A laser cutter hissed. They were cutting a new doorway into the side of the corridor. Padding and protective coverings bounded a bare, door-shaped patch to prevent damage to the floor and the rest of the wall as they gouged out native rock. The worker with the industrial laser cutter now stood by as two of her crew worked to tear a chunk of stone they'd carved from out of the future door space. This early in the process, they needed to use simple tools, a crowbar and a spade. Alibi saw other chunks they'd pulled out, small square boulders, on a nearby floating pallet.
"Alibi," his aunt said, turning to acknowledge him as he jogged up. She turned back to observe the workers, who had stopped, but now also turned, back to their gouging.
Chank!
A heavy-set worker hammered the crowbar into a groove they'd hollowed out.
"Ananita?" Alibi asked. "What are you doing?"
"Decided to begin my arboretum," she said. "Like my mentors, Dr. Van Kilner."
"Fwash!"
the laser cutter interrupted.
"Hold on!" Anita shouted over the laser.
The worker stopped.
"How about you take 5 for now, okay?" she said.
The 2 men and 2 women nodded. The workers put down their tools and instinctively moved a short distance down the corridor to leave Alibi and Anita to themselves.
"Decided I needed to do this," his aunt said. "This is our home now, Allie."
She looked around at the corridor walls, but she was looking beyond, at the whole base.
"Must make the most of it. Which reminds me."
"Oh no. I know that look in her eyes. What is she up to?"
"It's almost Christmas," she said. "We need to decorate our home."
"Not what I expected."
"Really?" Alibi asked. "We haven't celebrated since I was a kid."
I know, she said. "But everyone's been through a lot. Lost a lot. Lost friends. Lost our homes thanks to Constantine and his louts."
She smiled what Alibi thought of as her practical politician smile.
"I think celebrating the holidays could be good for us all," she said.
Alibi tried to read her, see if she was serious or floating the idea as a trial balloon.
"What if people don't celebrate?" he asked.
She looked a little exasperated.
"Then they can make up their own excuse to have fun," she said.
"She's serious."
"Guess it's a good idea," he said.
The old prime representative came out, proud and stern.
"I'm not asking your permission, Alibi," she said.
Alibi frowned.
"Yeah, who's in charge here?"
She softened, a little, smiled a more authentic smile. He could see it in her eyes.
"There is something I need to ask," she said.
"Uh-oh, here it comes."
"I need you to get us a Christmas tree," she said.
"What?"
The surprise stunned Alibi. He reacted as he sometimes did with Anita, feeling suddenly 7 years old again.
"What if I don't want to?" he asked. "What if I don't want to celebrate?"
In response, Anita shifted into motherly mode.
"Your father was a priest, Alibi," she said, laying on a little guilt the way any good mother would. "It's in your blood."
"He was also an assassin," Alibi cracked.
"Since we're talking blood." Anita pursed her lips. Alibi continued.
"Why don't you get Brisby to do it? Make him good for something."
"I don't know where he is," she said.
"Brisby's behavior has been kind of suspicious lately."
"Neither do I," Alibi said. "Could be a bad sign."
"Back to my tree, Alibi,"
Anita said, already moving on.
"I'm sure you can get us one in a store on Depot. You don't usually mind a run to the colony."
"I know," he said. He couldn't help it. He caved, as usual.
"I mean, you're right. I'll go."
"Go today," she said. "It needs to be soon. We need a little Christmas cheer around this place."
"All right," Alibi said. "I'll finish my run, get cleaned up, and head out."
"Good," Anita said, pleased.
She looked momentarily lost in thought. Alibi stretched his legs and prepared to jog off. He looked over at the workers, who looked relieved his and Anita's conversation was ending. He smiled.
"A nice tree, Alibi," his aunt said, as the thought hit her. "Make sure it has a mix of colored lights, not just one or two. And not flashing. Oh, I hate the flashing ones."
"Understood," Alibi said. "Orders received."
"Don't be a wise ass, Allie," she said.
Anita frowned as she admonished him.
"And, especially at this time of year, try to remember your father had a kind, loving, caring, and good side. You know, I see some of his best features in you, Alibi."
Now Alibi really wanted to run away. But his aunt wasn't finished yet.
"I do wish you could have known him when he was alive," she said.
She saddened.
"I know Aunt Anita," he said, turning sympathetic. "I know."
She nodded. He took it as his cue and began to jog off.
"All right,"
Alibi heard his aunt stir up the workers behind him.
"Break's over."
Alibi quickened his pace, trying to get out of earshot before the shrieking and blasting began again. He couldn't help but think of his father as he ran.
"I know him better than you know, Aunt Anita. Better than I can tell you, even. He taught me telepathic defenses in my dreams. And that wishing stone kind of brought him right to me."
Alibi heard the faint shriek of metal on stone behind him begin and fade as he jogged on.
"None of that is really knowing him, though. Wonder what he was like. Day-to-day normal BC. Even if you kill people, I mean, you can't be, like, all deadly all the time. Can you?"
BC, Bernard Campion, stood in the doorway to a classroom, about to leave. He smiled at the militant-looking woman priest standing at the front of the class of young couples. He'd been observing the class in his undercover role as Vatican advisor. Fairly new in his duties as an assassin for the Vatican and the new Catholic Church, BC found he enjoyed the play-acting required to pull off his assignments. They usually had him act the part of a spin doctor, a public relations man for the NCC. But they'd sent him to Mar del Plata this fall in a higher-level capacity, an official observer for Pope Peter II. He'd need the access his status granted him to pull off the mission when the time came.
"About a month now. Coming on Christmas."
"Be sure to tell the Vatican how well we prepare our couples for marriage, won't you, Father Campion?"
the woman priest asked. BC nodded. No translator units here. He'd needed to relearn Spanish for the assignment, and answered back in her native tongue.
"Absolutely, Reverend Gonzalez," he said. "All in my report. Thank you again for letting me audit your class. And remember, please, call me BC."
"Of course, BC," she said.
He closed the door behind him and made his way out of the building, heading up the street towards the Basilica Cathedral de los Santos Pedro y Cecilia, the old Mar del Plata Catholic Cathedral. BC nodded and smiled at an older woman, a parishioner whose face he recognized, as he passed her heading up the cathedral steps.
"Yep, that's me, BC, just your mild-mannered man from the Vatican."
Inside, BC walked up the center aisle of the church, alone with his thoughts. His carpeted footsteps still managed to echo in the silence of the empty church.
"Simply here to see how well you're transitioning to the new Catholic Church, that's all. Certainly not to establish my cover for my next hit, no."
He startled. Was that movement by the side of the altar?
"Is someone there?"
He tried to maintain a calm demeanor as he reached and crossed the altar and walked over to the empty sacristy, the area out of public view off of the altar where the priests, altar boys, and ministers prepared for Mass. He surveyed the room and then made a quick examination of the closet of clerical robes, the only real hiding place.
Empty.
BC backed out of the closet and bumped into the Advent wreath, waiting, candles unburned, ready to be used that coming Sunday. He caught the white one as it threatened to fall.
Yikes! Well, at least I didn't jump that time. Must be seeing things.
BC walked back to the door to the altar.
There's no one here.
He looked out from the sacristy to the front row of pews, ground zero for his mission.
Still a month till she comes down. Christmas Eve. Gotta be in the right place at the right time. Which reminds me, should head for dinner.
BC headed over the beautiful, glass-canopied, raised walkway leading from the church sacristy to the cathedral's rectory. The height afforded him a few glimpses of the ocean in the distance.
There are worse places to observe.
And they haven't asked me to say Mass,
which I've never done.
BC opened the door to the rectory, crossed the reception area, and headed for the kitchen. The bishop was already seated at the dinner table. BC liked Bishop Soul, or, as he still preferred, Father Ricky. BC figured if Soul was willing to call him BC, he was willing to call the bishop by his nickname, too. The warm, wafting aroma of fresh-baked bread caught BC's senses, and he inhaled it and smiled. "Father Campion," the bishop greeted him.
"Good! I was just telling Mrs. Gamera. We need to involve you more in church activities," he smiled.
"Need some help with the holiday masses? And we can't have a Vatican representative here and not show you off some."
Alibi stood in the open door to Krish's lab, still dressed in his jogging outfit. He'd wanted to head right home and clean up a bit after his run, but Krish called and said it was important. Could not wait! So Alibi brought his sweaty self directly to the lab to discover what was so urgent.
"You wanted to see me?" he asked. "Just finishing my run."
Krish toddled over, arms waving, encouraging Alibi into the lab.
"Yes, Alibi," Krish said. "Come in, come in."
Alibi noted how the short, older Indian man had grown rounder round his edges. Krish's usual white lab coat looked like it now strained a bit to contain him.
"Suppose it's a sign he's comfortable here at the Hornet's Nest. That's good, then."
"Look at this, Alibi," Krish said. "Look!"
"Wow, haven't seen Krish this excited in a long time."
Krish stepped back so Alibi could see the object sitting on the main table in the lab.
"Holy! Haven't seen anything like that in a couple of years."
A box about a meter square sat on the table, an intricate, almost pattern, wove across the surface of the cube. Furrows, hollows, and raised ridges worked into a design the human eye couldn't quite resolve into a whole. Alibi's vision blurred as his eyes tried to focus on the box, while his mind registered involuntary annoyance at its inability to resolve the object before him. Alibi knew whom the artifact belonged to the second he saw it.
"That's Devrisium," Alibi said. "Where'd you get it? How is it even here?"
"Not everything Devrisium faded from existence after the Time War," Krish said. "We still find things, occasionally."
"Really?" Alibi said. "No one's told me. I thought everything was gone."
"Well," Krish said, proud and a little conspiratorial, "I still have my network, you know, Alibi."
Alibi moved up next to the table to take a closer look at the box.
"Have to ask Aunt Anita why no one's told me about any other artifacts."
Alibi felt his hand drawn towards the box, but knew better than to actually lay a finger on it. A couple of years ago, he'd touched another Devrisium box, did a short bit of time traveling, met himself, and in so doing, caused some sort of problem with the time stream, which led to the Devrisium trying to eliminate him from all existence in a time war.
"Best not to touch it, even though there's something about it. I want to touch it. Why?"
"You sure it's real?" Alibi asked.
"Don't touch it, Alibi."
Alibi saw his own fingertips hovering involuntarily mere centimeters from the box and pulled his hands back, tucking his arms at his sides.
"I know," he said, chagrined. "The initial tests were positive for the Devrisium," Krish said. "I'm still waiting on the results from the few deeper scans we dared try. I wanted your opinion, too."
Krish drew close and whispered his question.
"Is it Devrisium?"
Alibi stepped back to take in the whole box. He looked it over, appraising it.
"I think so," he said. "Looks like.
Course, that means it might fade away at any second, too.
And it might not, Chris said. It is still here, after all. But, with the Devrisium gone, it may not even work. Not anymore.
Most of their stuff is gone, Alibi said. Heck, Krish, most people now don't even remember they existed in the first place. The time stream definitely shifted when they lost the Time War and disappeared.
Krish raised his voice.
Speaking of time, you must go, Alibi.
Alibi, startled, realized something about the box had again drawn him back close to it. Without thinking, he was again almost touching it.
What the?
Your aunt told me I could only borrow you for a few minutes,
Chris said.
She said there's a Christmas errand you must run.
He paused and smiled a broad smile as he continued.
And I am late for afternoon tea with a lady friend.
But I don't want to go, Alibi protested. This is important. I should be here.
Maybe you are not told about any other Devrisium artifacts because they were afraid you would get like this,
Krish said.
Very possessive, you know.
I am not, Alibi said. I'm just concerned. It's Devrisium. It could disappear any second.
Krish ushered Alibi physically towards the door.
And it could not, Krish said. However, crossing your aunt has definite consequences I do not care to face.
Alibi tried one last time as he left the lab. He turned, standing outside in the corridor.
Krish, please.
Krish started his sliding lab door to closing as he yelled back.
Go!
Alibi jogged a short way down the corridor.
Damn it.
He stopped, just out of sight of Krish's doorway.
I shouldn't do this,
but I have to go to Depot for Aunt Anita.
Alibi pressed his back against the wall. He tried to keep himself from view as he watched Krish's lab door.
And I need a closer look at that box before it vanishes, just like everything else left by the Devrisium has.
Krish walked out of the lab. He looked both ways down the corridor before heading in the opposite direction. He didn't seem to see Alibi.
Good, Alibi said under his breath. Go have your tea, Krish.
Alibi tiptoed back to the doorway. He looked around, then shook his head.
Can I try and look more suspicious?
Alibi keyed in Krish's door code, abusing the trust the old man had given him long ago.
Sorry, Krish.
Alibi walked into the lab, looking around as the door slid shut behind him. He focused back on the newly discovered Devrisium box and walked over to it.
No way this will still be here when I get back from my Christmas tree run. Christmas. Don't know what my aunt is thinking.
He stared at the box, leaning in. Part of him wanted to touch it, feel the sleek, organic design under his fingers, see if it was as smooth as it looked. He reached out his hands, but kept them at a deliberate distance.
My luck, I'd bring them back. Let them stay in the past.
Alibi circled around to the other side of the table. He kept his hands out in front of him, near the box, trying to feel for anything, a force field, or any sense of power coming from it.
Is that something? A tingle, maybe? Man, how is this thing even here?
Alibi's thoughts turned to his own traveling. He had to leave soon. He was running out of time.
Ah, can't stay here long. My aunt wants her tree. Don't need another guilt trip.
He shook his head.
Even if I don't believe her BS about my father, don't see him being a big Christmas guy. He was an assassin. Probably celebrated by killing people. In the name of God, of course.
Intent on the Devrisium artifact, Alibi didn't hear the door slide open. But movement caught his attention, and he looked up to see Krish standing in the open doorway, eyes questioning and hurt.
Krish?
A golden glow surrounded Alibi and the Devrisium box, which Alibi now realized he'd touched.
Uh-oh.
Alibi? What are you doing?
Krish faded away,
in a gray-gold haze.
That was part one of Alibi Jones' Christmas Present on Glow in the Dark Radio. We'll get into part two next week on our next episode. Of course, if you don't want to wait, you can get a copy of The Adventures of Alibi Jones, six short stories, as an ebook or a paperback or audiobook, and listen to this story or read it in its entirety now. Get more details at glowinthedarkradio.com/AlibiJones6ShortStories, or just go to glowinthedarkradio.com and click on the link there. Support me and this podcast at Patreon. Become a patron. Patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio. If you want more details about my voice work or to hear some of what I do, just head to glowinthedarkradio.com/voice-work, or go to glowinthedarkradio.com and click on voice work in the banner. Hope you'll join us for parts two and three of Alibi Jones' Christmas Present. We'll get into part two next week. That's all for this time around. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.